Welcome to Will I Ever Learn Chinese? I'm Jeanette Seikel. In this episode 12, I'm looking at the way in which Chinese speakers use dictionaries and in which they read and write their language using mobile phones or computers, for example. Let's have a look at Chinese writing and dictionaries. Of course, all natural languages are initially spoken, or signed in case they're sign languages, and writing is always secondary. There are plenty of indigenous languages these days that are only spoken or signed and not regularly or ever written. I have worked on a number of such languages myself, and some of these, such as Piraha, may only be written by linguists. Others, like Musaten, may only be written by a small handful of people. Once a writing system is established and is commonly used, it can be quite difficult to change it. Take English, for example, with its established writing system that today still reflects long-gone pronunciations, such as the KN in night, where the K is now silenced. Sometimes countries or language communities attempt a reform of the writing system to bring it more in line with the way the modern language is used, and thus make it easier for children to learn to read and write. I could cite countless examples, such as attempts in Germany to make the writing system more straightforward. What is common to most of these attempts, however, is that there's a lot of resistance from speakers, usually the older generations, but not always. Changing the writing system is a very difficult task. There will be a lot of compromising to do. The first, and usually quite logical suggestions, rarely make it to the end. They are replaced by half-hearted compromises. Why are such radical changes so difficult to implement? Imagine someone suggesting to write not, K-N-O-T, as not from now on, N-O-T. People would argue that they would find it difficult to distinguish from the negation not. They would say that it is difficult to read, as they are used to not, written with the KN. Most will agree that it is odd that we are still writing not with the K, but most won't have an alternative suggestion, so will make do with the old way in the end. After all, they argue, haven't we all learned it this way? And aren't children getting soft these days not being able to learn it? So, in this light, it is interesting to see what has happened with Chinese writing. Because of its immense cultural and historical influence, Chinese writing was used widely across Southeast Asia. Languages such as Korean, Japanese, and Vietnamese were initially written using the Chinese writing system. Korean has, for hundreds of years now, been written with its own syllabic writing system, Hangul. Vietnamese eventually adopted a romanized writing system. Japanese still uses a combination of syllabic writing and kanji based on Chinese characters. The classical Chinese writing system has also changed in China. There have been attempts to make Chinese writing easier in some way, and one of these attempts succeeded in the middle of the 20th century, at least in the People's Republic of China. The writing was simplified from traditional Chinese characters, called fantizi, to slightly less complex, so-called simplified Chinese characters, also called jiantizi. This change only affected mainland China and Singapore, while Hong Kong, Macau, and Taiwan still continued using the traditional writing system. That is the reason I was given the choice between the different writing systems when I first started to learn Chinese. To be fair, I had come to realize that the difference between the traditional and the simplified Chinese writing system is actually not very big. Once I had mastered some of the simplified Chinese writing, I could read traditional writing relatively quickly, even though I had to learn individual words. I just had to get used to the way that some common words were written and then build on that, looking up less common words, or deducing what the words could be from the context. I expect most people reading Chinese will come across the other writing system, independent of which one they are learning. One of my friends, for example, despite being from mainland China, enjoys using fantizi, the traditional writing system, saying that the characters are more expressive. He would often use a mixture of the traditional and simplified characters in his text messages, for example, which threw me at the start, but which I got used to eventually. I started to see his point too. While the traditional characters are more complex, they retain more of the individual elements of meaning and of sound. For example, I, love, is written in the simplified script in a nice way, but in the traditional script, there is an element in there that has disappeared in the simplified script, namely the character for heart. While the simplified form may be easier to write and read, the traditional form retains this important heart element, which has merely turned into a straight line in the simplified version. Now, speaking of text messages, how would Chinese people even go about writing their characters in electronic form? Do they have gigantic keyboards accommodating all of the different characters? I had been pondering this as well, but soon learned that in mainland China, people would just use pinyin, so the Latinized script, without any tone marks to write the words, and then be presented with a choice of possible characters arranged in order of frequency. Thus, if taking our example from above, writing xian on its own, we are presented with the options cash, amaranth, beginning, string, display, county, and so on. There's actually also xian, which is the name of a town, which consists of two characters, but since it's written in pinyin, xian, it turns up in the list as well. This example is taken from the word processing program on my computer. I simply had to change the settings to the input language Chinese pinyin, and when writing a word in pinyin, I'm given the most frequent words with a number next to each of them, and I then have to click on the number on my keyboard, which means I can now write the character in the manuscript. After some playing around, this became quite straightforward. For the less frequent characters, I often had to scroll through a list until I had found the desired one. Writing Chinese characters on the phone is similar, if not a little easier, as I was just presented with a scrollable list of possible characters without numbers, but again arranged in order of frequency in the context in which the character is used. To select a character, I just had to tap on it. Most of the time, this was very straightforward, and I only struggled on occasions when I wanted to write unusual words or names using less common characters. Even in those cases, it is still possible to write, for example, by looking up a character by the number of strokes it has, meaning by how complex it is. One can also look up characters by the radical they appear with. The option that appeals to me the most, however, is to draw the character myself. Selecting the drawing input method on the phone or computer, I could use my artistic skills to replicate the character I wanted to look up. There is one little hitch, though. The system works on the basis of the stroke order. That means that ideally I'll draw the characters in a standard way, otherwise the system won't recognize what I have written, even in cases where the final character looks very similar to the one on paper. The stroke order is a standard set of guidelines for how characters are written. For example, when writing bu, not, the horizontal line at the top needs to be drawn first, from left to right. Then the slanting line on the left from top to bottom, followed by the line going straight down, again from top to bottom, and finally the slanting line on the right is added. There are many free online resources explaining the basic stroke order, and some dictionary apps have pay-for features giving the stroke order of all the characters if necessary. I have so far been just fine knowing the basic rules and trying to follow them as much as possible. I don't always get the stroke order right, and in those cases, the dictionary or word processing program will not always recognize what I'm doing. If that's the case, I just try a different stroke order, and I usually get there in the end. I'm so glad, though, that I don't have to put all those tone marks in the pinyin as I'm putting characters in on my keyboard. First of all, I'm not always sure how to write the correct tone, even in cases where I pronounce it correctly. The main reason, though, is that it is not entirely straightforward to write some of the tones. Accent markers common in some European languages, such as the previously discussed accent aigu and accent grave of French, may be more easily available than others. I have found that using an ABC extended keyboard on the computer allows me to write the different tone marks more readily. I've also found keyboard shortcuts, which I have started using. Despite not having to write tones in pinyin when inputting Chinese characters, there is an added complication when writing the letter U, which appears in very common words such as nu, woman. It turns out that the letter V is used for this purpose when inputting text in pinyin. When wanting to write nüjen, women, in characters on the phone, the pinyin input would be N-V-R-E-N instead of nüjen, N-U-R-E-N, which is how it would actually be produced in pinyin in written form. I was amazed to see how many other systems there were for writing Chinese, either as a Latinized version or with characters. Cantonese is often written with numbers placed after vowels indicating different tones. In Taiwan, text messages may be more readily written using bopomorpho, an alphabetical system originating in simplified versions of Chinese characters associated with their sound. In this system, there are less than 40 characters, which makes it relatively easy to represent on a keyboard, similar to alphabetic writing systems using the Latin script. There are also other systems, and one, an older one, the Wei-Giles romanization system, was commonly used before pinyin replaced it. It is still commonly found in loanwords in English, such as Tai Chi, as we call it in English, which in pinyin is actually written Tai Chi. And it's also found in very common names, such as HSU, which in pinyin would be written XU and pronounced Xu. While pinyin input is common in mainland China, I realize that many Chinese speakers have a simpler way to send messages. They often simply send voice messages. That takes away the need to write out complex characters and makes online conversations much faster. What happens if we need to look up a word in a dictionary? I remember being equally confused when I first started using an Arabic dictionary, but I got used to the system pretty fast. The Chinese system, it seems, is quite logical as well. Traditional dictionaries are organized by the number of strokes needed to draw the character, so E1 is just a dash. R2 would be two such dashes, one on top of the other. All the way up to... Well, if you search online, you'll find reference to characters with 64 strokes in the simplified system and 172 in the traditional system. These characters are so complex that they can't be written accurately on the computer. Also, they're not regularly used. But even among the commonly used words are those that are represented by complex characters, and one of those is guan, which means a jar or a jug, which has 23 strokes. It depends on the dictionary you're looking at, but those that don't use pinyin order, traditional dictionaries, would be arranged by the stroke order first and the radical next. So you would have to know how many strokes there are, and then you would have to look for the right radical. I had looked at paper dictionaries, But I soon found out that there was an easier way to access a dictionary. I purchased a very comprehensive phone app instead. Now, not only could I carry this around with me at all times, but I also had a wide range of options depending on my needs. Thus, I could add a character recognizer feature whereby I would only have to take a photo of the word I wanted to have translated. Personally, I find it more satisfying to write out the character myself, but I noted that this option existed should I ever need it in the future. Remembering how the paper dictionaries worked, I started using the dictionary app by looking up words according to the radicals or, indeed, by other elements I recognized. A useful feature of the dictionary app was that it gave a breakdown of individual elements of characters, including radicals and sound elements. One can then list all the words containing the radical or element one is interested in. So, for example, if the character I wanted to look up included the radical gêne, the one that looks a bit like a one in English writing, I would look up all the words appearing with this radical in order or frequency. And usually I would soon find the character I was looking for. At first I thought this was not only magical but fun. I would focus on the details of each character, see if I recognized anything, and then work my way through the list. I started to see relationships between elements, be it in the sound or meaning, and my overall insight into the workings of the language increased. However, as my Chinese improved, I started to find this method rather cumbersome. Firstly, it was very time intensive, and I would not always find the right character straight away. Sometimes that was because I had mistaken an element for a similar looking one. Sometimes I was looking up rarer words that appeared very low on the list. Secondly, I often came across simple characters or character combinations that I did not know any element of, so I had no idea where to start. That's when I learned to use the trackpad method outlined before, writing the characters myself. So suddenly I could write out all of those characters and didn't need to look them up in the same way as before. Once I had committed to learning Chinese characters, I realized that I was relying less and less on pinyin and more on the characters themselves. I even found that I was starting to prefer looking at new content using characters in my learning program rather than pinyin. I was quickly getting better at recognizing and reproducing characters, though I always lagged slightly behind my understanding and speaking skills. I was starting to wonder how many characters I would eventually have to learn. Looking for answers online, I realized that the opinions varied widely, but overall people would suggest that knowing about 1,000 characters should make 90% of the language available to me. 1,000 did not seem that many, I thought. I had been given the 1,000 most frequent words in Chinese book, and I started to leaf through the pages. There were actually many characters I had not seen before at this stage. It would take me a while, and I would have to do a lot of reading, I gathered. If I wanted to read more widely and understand the majority of what I was reading, I would probably have to add another 2,500 characters to my repertoire, making it 3,500 characters in total. This would be enough to read most texts, bar the odd names using rarer characters, and would be more or less equivalent of a Chinese teenager's reading ability. An older, educated speaker of Chinese would probably know double that number of characters. In fact, even educated people will come across new or unusual words. In these cases, it usually helps to know the building blocks of characters and to try to understand the words within the contexts in which they are used. My writing was getting better, but I would encounter snags from time to time. Of course I would. I realized that some characters looked very similar. For example, at first I thought the character for go and be were the same character, until I started writing them myself and realized the differences. Likewise, there's a character for e, which means already, and g, which means oneself, which looks a bit like a two in English at a push. And they look very similar. One has a teeny tiny line that extends ever so slightly further than the other. Whenever I came across one of them, I was unsure which one it was, and I found it almost impossible to remember the differences, so I needed to find a way to make them stand out. That's when I noticed that writing them down next to one another was a good way of making the distinctions clear. I started to collect the characters that confused me in a document on my phone. Whenever I came across a character like that, I'd add it to the list. Once I saw these characters listed next to one another, they didn't seem quite so scary. I was able to tell the differences more easily and eventually knew the differences intuitively. All it took was to look at the list on my phone from time to time.